Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. My name is Kevin Orbaker, and welcome to another MTC studio session. We have a great session today. We're going to talk about development at cloud speed. And with me today to help do this presentation, we have Mark Skog. Mark, you want to introduce yourself?
Absolutely, Kevin. Great to be here with you. I'm Mark Skog out of our Chicago MTC, and just love being here to present with you today.
Great. Well, thanks for being here, coming out all the way to the West Coast. And, you know, Mark, development, you know, the title of this is Development at Cloud Speed. I've been a developer for years, and quite honestly, when I think of development, I don't typically think of anybody helping me, quite honestly. You know, for years and years, getting things done and kind of building things has always been a task that a developer has had and something that, you know, we've just kind of undertaken on our own. You know, today's topic is really around creating better experiences for the developer, and I'm just curious, what does that mean?
Well, it's kind of funny, Kevin. You know, if you think about my history over 20 years, started in consulting services even at Microsoft, I think it's a perfect match for us to be here today because I was the bad cop behind the scenes on the infrastructure side, dealing with operational issues and always saying, you know, if the developers put a little more thought around how this got together. And of course, you know, on your side, I'm sure you're thinking all we're doing is delaying you and in the process that's moving forward. So I think, you know, today I'm kind of excited to talk about how those worlds can merge and how we can really add value to each other versus just being a thorn in each other's side.
That's great. Yeah, no. A little bit of house cleaning. For those watching us live right now, we actually have a Q&A window for you. If you want to go ahead and leave questions, we'll be answering those as the session goes on today. We'll make sure we address those questions as real time as we can. So Mark, go ahead and just kind of give me an overview of what the subject is today and how you as IT can help me.
Fantastic. So this is a great question to ask you, Kevin. What do you think is causing most of the downtime on a lot of the systems that are running today from an application perspective, mission critical or not?
Hardware,
of course.
I'm gonna say hardware.
And I think there was some more reality to that as you look through the operational side. I think if you look at a lot of the reports that are out now, and it doesn't matter if it's open source, Microsoft, or what kind of hardware you're on, the hardware is getting much, much more reliable. And with resiliency built in, at best, it's, you know, 20% if you think about the hardware, the network, the power issues. And what's really a lot of the issue is really around the operations errors, operators, specifically people level errors, or application failures. You think about things like change management, systems being overloaded, or weak problem detection. It doesn't mean bad development, of course. I would never imply that with you, Kevin. But in this case, it's really around making sure that, you know, you have the whole process as all the different development code goes together to make sure you're solidifying that environment. And so that's kind of the conversation I really wanted to have on why DevOps becomes so important. I know we talked earlier today and you just said, you know, why can't I just go into Azure and pop into the portal and how easy it is to create a VM, and we're going to get into that in a little bit. But in this process, it's really about how do I give you that same agility to actually create new environments and put a little instrumentation on that and a little automation on that so that in the case of running the systems, it's a more smooth flow between systems and I can better manage the load of the systems and rolling back and forth between revisions of code. And if you think about this, this is not just a Microsoft-specific thing. So if you think from the Puppet Labs report, I don't know if you read the DevOps report from it, but really talking about all the benefits of pulling together really a DevOps environment. And they're numerous if you think about all the different aspects. It's not just about making the infrastructure better. My guess is one of your number one issues when I talked to you, especially when we were talking about the on-prem world, was just how long it took me to put new systems in place for you. You know, sure, you can put the development environment in place, but now you need a database, you need an application server, and, you know, pulling that together usually was not an overnight process. And so that's kind of the problem statement we're trying to correct here.
Yeah, absolutely. To your point, by the way, you know, I spend a ton of time typically in my own development environment setting up the lab or my own lab, let's say, for whatever I'm doing. To your point, I spend a ton of time, you know, standing up SQL or some kind of data system in the back end, or sometimes even building complete OSs from the ground up, which is time consuming, but quite honestly, it seems to be, from a developer perspective, faster sometimes than going to IT.
Yeah, and I think I hear that a lot. I mean, you know, as I look at that skill set, I admire it, right? It's fantastic. But from my side of the house, I think about things like, you know, what are you thinking about patching? I mean, is that something you even have a concern on? Or if you think about security and access to the information, you know, how often do you think about those types of topics? And I'd be curious what you think, Kevin. Are you often patching your systems once they're up?
Yeah, that's you know, you bring up a good point because typically I don't care. You know, quite honestly, once it's up and running, even if I use that lab for quite some time, I don't ever go back and secure it or patch it or ensure that, you know, it's even up to date. Unless, of course, something I'm writing requires some update. But yeah, typically it's kind of ignored.
Yeah, and I think a lot about it from a lifecycle management perspective. And, you know, from my perspective, it doesn't really matter if you're looking at Microsoft's ALM or from an application lifecycle management or somebody else's, and we'll talk about our ability to plug in other tools. I know even on your tool set that you use on a day-to-day basis, it's not all Microsoft, and that's fantastic. But the idea here is how to get better integration. You know, earlier this week, I was talking to a manufacturing customer, and a lot of their change control process was different people in the organization. Not everything was even documented for a mission-critical application. And when I asked them to look at what their SLA agreement was and compare that to their uptime, there were some huge deviations year over year. You know, we started the conversation as how can I get them to 5.9s? And really that had nothing to do with technology at all. And so that's really about how we get this framework in place so that we can get better integration from all the way from planning to operating and releasing. And of course, your part of it, which would be the development and test being absolutely critical to those applications.
Yeah, you know, part of that also, you mentioned a couple things there that are actually important to me. You mentioned my tools. You know, I do like Visual Studio. I do use Visual Studio, but quite honestly, there's a lot of things I do outside of Visual Studio. You know, and a lot of the projects I deal with, I don't even have, let's say, TFS, right? And very open source friendly. Me personally, some of my favorite languages now, you know, are like Node.js and Python, a little bit of R in here. So, you know, from I think of dev, test, and ops around the Microsoft stack, and I, you know, everybody thinks C# and TFS, and you know, what does the kind of platform, what you're mentioning right now, does that really apply to me if I'm using those other tools and technologies?
Absolutely, it's a different company. You know, you think about since the time I started in '96 in a very Microsoft-centric world, and everything I could talk to you about was Microsoft. And I built this slide for you, Kevin, because I know you were going to ask me that question and talk about open source. We have a huge investment in open source at Microsoft. And this is an investment where we're continuing to invest, not just in supporting it, but continuing to contribute to the ecosystem and making investments to make sure that we're providing the best of both worlds. So it's all about choice for us. And so in our world, if you don't want to use any of the Microsoft technology around development or around VMs that you want to create for infrastructure as a service, let's say you want to be all on Linux, you know, we love that. You know, we love Linux. So in this case, I know particularly in your case, you use GitHub, for instance, right? And so fully supported in this ALM environment, you know, all of the Puppet integration, if you want, outside of VS is certainly supported. And you know, for a lot of my friends I've been friends with a long time in the dev world that are using Eclipse, fully can plug in as well. So for us, it's not about prescriptive guidance saying you have to use our tool set, but how do we provide this capability we're going to talk about across that entire ecosystem and be able to support that?
Yeah, I see right there, you know, I'm looking at some of the things that you have here. You know, obviously in Azure now we have the ability to do Puppet and Chef and things like that. So from what I'm seeing here, this using this ecosystem that we already have in Azure really does work with this kind of new world you're talking about as well, huh?
Right, and I'm going to take it to the next step as well, because you know, today the challenge is, you'll see where it says public cloud and Microsoft Azure, but there's a private cloud aspects of this as well. And so if you think about that ecosystem, you know, we're really talking about managing the environments where they sit today and moving you at your speed, not our speed. Because in the case of development, I know the pressure is going to be on for you and your projects to continue to deliver, and it's not about putting any interruption on that, whether it's, you know, in our cloud, somebody else's cloud, whether it's in a hosted environment or on-premise. You know, when we talk about that public cloud, can't even talk on that. When you talk about the public cloud, private cloud, it's really about supporting that hybrid environment, both from an open source and Microsoft-specific world.
That's good to hear. I mentioned the fact that, you know, as a developer, quite often I tend to be on my own and live in my own world. Some of those things you're mentioning there are things that are actually, quite honestly, challenges for me to deal with on my own. And just from habit, or the fact that quite often, a lot of times IT is, I wouldn't say prevents, but slows down the process that I need to get my tasks done and my projects done. You know, it's good to hear, at least from the view that we see here, that there's an opportunity maybe to improve that process for me as well from the IT standpoint.
Right, and from an operational perspective, you'll see on the right-hand side, it's also about talking about how do we get seamless integration for things like capacity and making sure that the systems are running well. I know you, of course, would never write code that's not performant, but in the case of, you know, running that, right, if I put that on a system that's not sized correctly or overloaded with other applications, all of a sudden I can have inherent performance issues that you didn't see in dev and test. Yeah. And so in this case, you know, it gives me that ability to monitor that and the performance criteria and the heuristics around that throughout the process. And we'll talk about that automation in a little bit. But that's really the thought process around it. It's around improving that entire end-to-end ecosystem, but giving you that freedom and agility so things just spin up and pop up. And you don't have to really worry about whether or not, you know, you're gonna wait 6 weeks or 12 weeks for IT to come through and deliver a system.
That'd be helpful.
So at the end, here's what my goal is for you. My goal is to help you and convince you that I'm gonna have a solution to increase your deployment frequency, reduce the change lead time. I know this is really huge. The business demands are much higher. And so this includes the entire landscape of an environment. And you mentioned earlier things like databases, and I talked about application servers or web servers, right? I know in a lot of cases you're relying on IT for that delivery. And even in the world of the cloud where you can spin some of that up, my guess is you'd probably not want to have to deal with that if you could just, you know, hit a button and all of that was spun up for you in minutes. And so we'll talk about that.
A magical easy button?
A magical easy button. I need my easy button here. I got one in Chicago.
That would be wonderful, actually.
And then, you know, from my perspective on the reliability performance indicators, it's about reducing that change fail rate, right? And then the time it takes to repair. That's what, from an infrastructure side, you talk to folks, that's really more of that concern around making sure we're providing those environments. So I'm going to talk a little bit about our automation in something called DevTest Labs. I need a few more acronyms here to make it an official Microsoft video, I think. But I'm going to ask you an open question. Have you played with DevTest Labs yet?
Again, being a developer and knowing what I need to know, I'll be honest, I haven't. I've heard it. I've heard of it. And I know it's designed to be developer friendly. But at the end of the day, right, it's for me, it's been more about just spinning up my VMs and, you know, getting what I need to get done.
That is the exact answer I expected to hear. So I think this would be a good time to really show you an overview video of kind of what DevTest Labs is, and it's just a really short one we're going to go through. And then I think right after that, I've been in slides way too long. You know, I don't even like slides. So I think we should go into the Azure portal, show you what Azure DevTest Labs really looks like, and talk about some of the differences.
That'd be great.
Fantastic. So from that, can we get someone to play that video that we have around the overview of Azure DevTest Labs?
Your project has started, and the clock is ticking. In order to deliver your project on time with high quality, you're facing all kinds of challenges with DevTest environments. The delays in creating the environments, time-consuming configuration, production fidelity issues, and high management costs. Azure DevTest Labs solves the problems by providing developers and testers a self-service sandbox environment to quickly create dev test environments while minimizing waste and controlling costs. DevTest Labs enables developers and testers to create pre-provisioned environments with everything the team needs to develop and test their applications. You can start with base images from the Azure Marketplace or from your own VHD, and use artifacts to install tools, deploy applications, or run some custom actions once the VM is provisioned. Formulas in the lab can store all the values that are needed to create a lab VM, so that you can get your environment ready with one simple click. DevTest Labs makes it easier to control costs by allowing you to set policies on your lab, such as the number of VMs each lab user can own and the VM sizes allowed for VM creation. DevTest Labs also enables you to automatically shut down and start VMs on a schedule. Resource usage and spending are visualized in the lab, and you can set thresholds and get alerts. DevTest Labs allows you to capture and share environment templates and artifacts with your team or organization. Use Azure Resource Manager templates to automate your lab or environment provisioning. After you configure your environment, simply save it as a custom image and share it in the lab or even outside of the lab. Artifacts are loaded from your source control repository and can be shared across labs. Make use of pre-made plugins, command line tools, or APIs to provision dev test environments directly from your preferred continuous integration tools or automated release pipeline. For example, pre-made dev test lab tasks are available in Visual Studio Team Services so that you can create a VM to run the tests, save the VM with your latest bits as your golden image, and delete the VM when it's no longer needed after the testing is done. So with Azure DevTest Labs, developers and testers can get their environments in minutes instead of days or weeks. You can also set quotas and policies, reuse templates and artifacts through source control, and integrate with your existing toolchains. Try Azure DevTest Labs today at akka.ms/DTL to get your fast, easy, and lean DevTest environments in Azure, specifically for your team, on demand.
So hopefully that gave you a good overview, Kevin, of what we're talking about with DevTest Labs. But you know, I think a picture is worth a thousand words. You know, the first thing I would tell you is you really need to use the easy button. We like those, akka.ms/DTL or DevTest Labs, and you'll get an entire overview with documentation, some links to some groups there that you can look at, and it'll give you a complete overview of what we're talking about with DevTest Labs. And here you can see it's going to ride me right to that page, so I don't even need to search for it in Azure. You could, of course, Bing that, or if you have another search engine you want to use, you can search on DevTest Labs for Azure as well. It'll come right up. You'll notice one of the really cool aspects on this is I'm not going to add cost. I know, Kevin, for you, that's probably less of an issue. But on the infrastructure side, important to understand, we're just taking a lot of the capability that's in Azure and making it easier to use. So I'm not going to spend any more time aside from saying that same video I went through is out here on the site. And I'm actually going to pull you into the Azure portal. And hopefully everyone's seen this and noticed this is what our portal looks like. This is actually a live portal for our MTC in Chicago for my login. So you can see some of my subject matter expertise coming in here on the infrastructure side and some of our partnerships. In this case, the SAP one running HANA. But what I really want to talk about is DevTest Labs. So my guess, Kevin, is the first place you go to start something new is you go here to the new button, and you're going to start a VM in your world and maybe run a database or a Linux client or whatever, and that's your world and how it works today. Is that pretty accurate?
That's very accurate. That's probably my favorite place to go is right there to that new button. And you know, whether I'm looking for a Linux VM or a Windows VM or even creating a, you know, a PaaS service, a platform service, whether it be Azure SQL Database or what have you, that right there is exactly where I go every day.
That's great. And since you're not paying for the subscription, my guess is you picked the smallest size virtual machine to lower cost. So when you're going in here in the virtual machine, you're going to select just one that's very cost effective for us as a corporation, right?
Yeah, no. My goal is to spend as much money as I can because it's there and available for me. You know, for me, I want to be able to, regardless of what I need, actually just typically pick a pretty beefy one just so I don't have to worry about performance or issues like that. So I don't pay a whole lot of attention to the cost unless somebody tells me otherwise.
Yeah, I kind of had a feeling we were going to have that conversation. So I don't want to limit you. And, you know, I am the bad cop a little bit about talking about control. But you'll notice here we have this thing called DevTest Labs that comes up under developer. And I really want to walk you through that. We're going to create a DevTest Lab for you, Kevin. And I want to make sure you understand the different features that are there and how you can leverage this. You know, just so you know, your interface wouldn't have to be this DevTest Labs here. Of course, with Visual Studio or with automation, you can go into other tools to actually add in your environment and manage your environment. But, you know, from an infrastructure side, I really love this because when I click on it, it's really walking me through the entire process of configuring a system. And so for this, I'm going to call it Kevin DTL for DevTest Labs. I'm going to put it in our Chicago subscription here, and it should just pop up here and allow me to pick a location. And when I pick a location, I'm going to pick a location on the West Coast here for you. One of the things that I noticed that is on here, which is absolutely critical, and where I love to pick on you around bringing systems down, if you notice that new tool we ran internally, the Grim Reaper, to figure out all those VMs that were running costing a lot of money, I actually had a G5 system running for a development environment for SAP for their HANA product, so I was actually running a lot of cost. So I think even on the infrastructure side, sometimes it gets away from us because when we're not using it, we forget to shut it down. By default, auto shutdown's enabled. I'm going to go through that and talk to you how we can manage that so that we don't have any issues. And my network connectivity here has not been perfect right now. I still see it's pulling up that window. So what I'm going to do is just go to the home screen here and go ahead and click to one that's already created for my connection.
Let me just you mentioned something there that's kind of interesting to me, and you said auto shutdown. what does that really mean for me? I mean, are you shutting down my services in the middle of the day when I need them, or how does...
No, on, you can set it a couple different ways, and I'm going to go ahead and go into that automation. The cool thing for me when I really think this through is we can do inactivity. We can set it by a schedule. And I work a lot with our folks in MSIT. In fact, a medical devices company I was working with a couple of weeks ago was talking about how they do rotating development around the world and how they had to have the systems up 7x24. And what we did is we looked at instrumentation on how those systems are running. And even though they're around the world, the specific different development environments really had more of a 12 to 12, or I should say 5x12, 5 days a week, 12 hours a day development cycle, unless they were in a release cycle. So we could set some automation on that so the systems automatically come up when people come in the morning. You know, I know on the West Coast here that would not be 6 a.m., but let's just say something realistic like 9 or 10 a.m. they come up, and I know you work late, so maybe, you know, it doesn't shut down to 6 or 7 p.m., right? Yep. So just by doing that, you're cutting over half your cost out if you do the math. Because if you're running 5x12, that's a great environment. Because I'm persisting the information to disk, I'm not losing anything, even if it does shut down, and I'm allowing you as a developer to extend that. But what I'm looking for is things like inactivity or how long it's running before I'm going to actually force you to extend that reservation. And so those are the things that I think really have a lot of merit. So now I've got a better connection here. I don't know what was going on. I just killed the browser window. Maybe it was my machine here. Being a someone that loves to try the daily code, I do have a more of a daily build on this this machine that I'm running. And so once you get in and you create that dev test environment, and here you'll see the overview screen. You saw that I had some options there to start with on actually automating the entire environment I'm setting up for this lab. And each one of your projects can have its own lab. You can have multiple people. We'll talk about quotas, security, and those sorts of things as we move on. If you need a hardcore dev environment, let's say you want to use some of that great NVIDIA processing we have with our partnership and some GPU-based development, or you need high memory systems or disk, this doesn't mean you can't have that, right, if that's what's required for development. But what it means is we're going to right-size those environments. So at the get-go, what I'm going to do is talk about the virtual machines and the size of those machines that I can manage. I can also go and look at things like cost settings, right, and policy settings. And this is really, really important because on this environment, even if I do nothing but start monitoring this, I'm going to actually look at what my cost is around those environments and start to see trending and the automation. And then from policy, you know, this is where I can actually set up some of the policies for the environment on how it actually auto shuts down our startup. So in this case, so you don't even have to worry about starting up your VM in the morning or creating a VM. When I have a new environment for you, here's where I can set my times up. I can set the time zones on that. And I can let the virtual machines be set for auto start. So for this lab, I'm going to go on the West Coast time zone here. And so with this, we'll be able to set that in Pacific time. I'm going to run it Monday through Friday. Well, we know the weather is nice here. You probably won't be in Friday, so we'll just run it Monday to Thursday for this. And I'm going to start it at 7 a.m. You know, at any point, I can get something more realistic. So in this case, if I want to change it, I can put whatever time I wanted. Just based on West Coast here, I'm going to go more realistic and, you know, say I'm going to set it at 9 a.m. You notice even though I can individually alter that, on this one it didn't make me go through each window, and that's part of the advantage of this. Here's the one that I would almost always use, and, you know, in this case, I didn't go ahead and save those changes because we're just showing you what that looks like. But let me go ahead and save that so I can show you the shutdown feature as well. It's going to validate all those rules that I have around that. Now it's going to go through and show me on the shutdown I have that same criteria and flexibility. And so in this case, I think that's really critical when we talk about this environment. I can also give you flexibility. You know, let's say that you needed some flexibility in virtual machine sizes, or you wanted to be able to have control over how many machines you're running. I can still manage my cost by saying I'm going to limit you to 10 virtual machines of a certain size, or, you know, I want to have so many per lab. So let's say you're doing development with others, you know, always a challenge in development. Got to pick back on the development side a little. But all joking aside, you know, if you have a project that you're working on together, I can say that project size is limited to a certain scope. And so that gives me some great capability. And so from this perspective, you know, I'm just managing that shut on and shut off capability. And this should actually be able to pop in on the shutdown now and show me that window. Got to click in the right spot for that. So here's where I can actually enable the scheduled shutdown, and I can talk about notification. And that becomes really important because in this case, you know, I can allow you to extend that. But one of the things that I noticed, even on the infrastructure we're not really good at, is doing the shutdown automatically. And Microsoft has an internal process. We monitor the utilization of systems. And I can tell you, even though we're a global company, the amount of utilization we have in regions after hours in any given region is limited unless we're on a release cycle. And again, you can always turn these off. So let's say you're on a heavy release cycle. You don't need to be bugged. You know, Kevin, you're telling me I'm going to be 7x24. You're going to get a case of Mountain Dew and just start working over the weekend. You have that ability to go ahead and do that. And so that gives you that that capability from that perspective. And so that's what I want to show you from this window here. And then from your window, let's say you wanted to go, and I'm going to force you to go into Visual Studio, not use Team System. But let's say you were on Visual Studio and you want to see what that looked like. This is definitely a machine problem because my home machine's run a little slow here, so I apologize for that slight delay. You know, from that side of it, you know, when you're thinking about VS, this is kind of what your world looks like. So once I configure those, I have the ability to talk about the deployments you're going to manage and run. And what's really cool about this is I don't any longer have to worry about, you know, deploying multiple VMs or multiple environments. Let's say you wanted to leverage, you know, some PaaS services as well for database or whatever. You can manage those as an entire environment. And there's really this super cool feature called desired state configuration. And what I really love about desired state configuration, if you haven't looked at DSC, is it allows me to really make sure I'm managing that automation graphically even for you. And then when I'm done with my configuration, in text-readable format, I can get a configuration script that's going to make sure it's managing dependencies and resiliency and other things. So I know you don't really care what happens in the background. So if there's a failure, you just want it to fix itself. You don't want to have to pull your hair out saying, you know, why doesn't this just work the way I want it? You want to know that everything you need for your dev project is just there and running. Is that a fair thing? If I could offer that, that'd be pretty valuable for you?
That'd actually be pretty good. You know, you were just talking about failures and problems. So many times, because I kind of go rogue, right, and spin up my own systems, my own VMs, my own environments. You know, quite often if there is a failure, I'm also left to cleaning it up or fixing it, and sometimes I lose quite a bit of time that I could be, you know, doing more development.
Yeah, so I want to move that infrastructure component of that off for you. So that's really what this is all about when we say the DSC engine, right? It has all the dependency resolution, the error handling, the reboot resiliency, repeatable automation, that I was telling you about. So we have an entire site dedicated to this. I'm not going to bore you by giving you a long overview of really talking through this, but at the infrastructure side even, I can actually create this and manage it across. And so this is really what you think about from the DSC and Azure working better together. This is what that screen looks like in the portal. And since my machine was a little slower, I decided to put it in here and to show you the screenshot of it. In this case, when you think through it, also those other aspects you talked about, what if you wanted to use Puppet or Chef? You notice they're right there in the screen. So in those capabilities, I can look at using those along with you know, any custom scripts you might have that you're gonna put in there as well. And so it gives you some great capability to pick on what kind of virtual machine configuration it is, whether it's Linux or Windows, what kind of automation you're gonna do around that as well. And automation becomes really cool as well. And so if you haven't looked at our ARM, or basically our resource management capabilities around that, there's some great capabilities around automation. And it's not just for infrastructure, but if you think about it from a dev perspective, I have some great automation capabilities now available in the cloud.
Yeah, so that's actually a question I do have. You know, It's one thing to be able to have an environment for me to use and do that, but one of the things that I, as a developer, would never have time to do or typically don't manage is more like a, you mentioned the easy button, like a templated environment, right? Where I can say, I want an environment that, you know, has these things ready to go, whether it be a development server, or database server, but kind of that combination of services that I might need. You mentioned ARM. Is that something that would help me, or what's, how does that work?
Absolutely. So the idea around that, you know, when I talk about the automation and the whole Azure automation capability, there's a whole area you can go in for automation. If you look at the portal again, that's going through on the slide to show you. As we look through those different services, you can look at the automation services. It's really about managing that. But as this world's changing, it's not just managing it from IaaS, where a lot of companies are coming from, but it's also taking into account things like PaaS and SaaS. And so where that becomes really critical for you is you no longer have to worry about things like extending the fabric for performance. You know, we can build that into the fabric and the automation to say, if I'm above a certain capacity, right, I'm going to go ahead and extend that capacity, or the number of application servers, or my database capacity, or even your application servers, right, for running processing, let's say, or batch. You have the ability to manage that, not just from an IaaS perspective. And of course, we have the ability to support things like the containerized view of things, but you know, most of that was developed more from an IaaS type perspective, not taking into account things like PaaS and SaaS, where it's really more configuration than it is even having to spin anything up. Of course, there's no OS on those, no ability to really have to worry about a lot of those core components. For you as a developer, Kevin, I have to think that's great, because you take me out of the picture, right? It's just a button that really allows you to start that up and manage it.
Well, I'm kind of taking you out of the picture from my perspective, but obviously, you know, you have work to do on your end to make that easy for me. I mean, that easy button doesn't happen, right? So,
yeah.
Absolutely.
So, you know, this is another example where I have a customer I'm working with. They're coming out next week to Chicago, and we're taking on some cognitive services into a custom app they have. And they're going to create some thumbnails and then do some processing around face recognition around it. And, you know, for them, it's really great because, you know, they have an on-prem custom solution that's a scale-up hardware solution that's not working really well for them around all of that cognitive processing. We're able to take advantage of our cloud services for that, integrate that in, and we're using some of these automation capabilities to talk about how we're pulling that together. And of course, living up to what I was talking about, we're using DevTest Labs as part of the demo for that. And I think that becomes really critical because it's really a way for them to manage their cost. Today, one of their biggest issues is cost overrun. And I think that's something that, you know, can be really, in the, especially in those more aggressive environments where you think about machine learning or you think about processing analytics, it's something you really have to think through. Because as a corporation, I guess, you know, not necessarily from the dev side alone, but also from a performance side, because now you have this great capacity of the cloud, right? You're talking about millions of servers and the ability to scale out so you can do jobs much, much faster if necessary. And so for you, you're not going to be waiting as long for a lot of the tasks, but still getting a cost-effective way to run that. So in this environment, I am thinking not just today on IaaS, but I'm thinking about PaaS and SaaS. And you know, I know you're seeing the trend around that. We all hear about it. And so we see a big shift already for people looking first towards PaaS or SaaS-based solutions. And as a developer, I know you're already doing some work on the PaaS side, right? My guess is you don't want to put an IaaS server in for SQL now, or SQL Data Warehouse, you're just going to use the PaaS services. Is that kind of how you're looking at it today?
If I can avoid a VM, I typically try to look at the PaaS services or you know, the in some cases, you know, even integrating PaaS and SaaS together. But to hear that this kind of brings all of those into one place for management purposes, again, not that I care so much, other than you could definitely relieve a lot of load off my back to make it easier.
Yeah, so we call this a runbook, really, when you talk about the authoring in Azure. And so that gives me the ability to go ahead and automate all the aspects, right? Not just from your perspective, but you know, from the infrastructure side as well. So you see there we're talking about things like the operational aspects, deployment aspects, monitoring optimizations, resiliency, all those things you would think of in that environment. And I think, you know, sometimes people don't think about resiliency in dev test. And this is an environment where you're thinking back to the hardware failures, even if it's only 20% of the time, right? How are you bringing that entire landscape back up and running? A lot of people, especially, you know, if you're not familiar with it, would think that, you know, a dev environment is just, you know, IDE, right? And as you know, behind the scenes, there's lots of different components that you have to really manage. And the last thing you want to do is have to worry about those core components that you're just expecting to be there. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just you mentioned the IDE. I mentioned earlier, you know, sometimes the languages I use don't even need IDEs. Sometimes it's Notepad, right?
Yeah.
That's my IDE is Notepad. And but to your point, there's so much in the back end that I depend on, not just like to have, it's the requirements. I can't even, you know, if I don't have access to data, regardless of whether it's a VM or a PaaS service, you know, that prevents me from doing half my job. So yeah, so I, obviously having that service, those capabilities, and to ensure that they're up and running, again, has been, for me, quite often, a huge burden.
Yeah, and from my perspective, I get a lot from this as well. I can make sure that my CISO is not on my case, that we're not doing patch management for security, or I'm having any bugs in the environments that are out there. I can do that. I can manage my backup orchestration, my change control, right, monitoring and remediation. And so I'm getting a lot of things in the infrastructure side today that, quite frankly, are not institutionalized as the way they probably should be in the broad spectrum of customers I talk to on a day-to-day basis.
I'm sure as a developer, I do things that are rogue and probably not even, if they were to be addressed by management, like you said, they're not within the realm of IT management and therefore can cause heartache. from the fact that, you know, the systems aren't managed, they aren't backed up, they aren't secured, I can totally see how that, you know, even from a developer, how we should be playing in that field correctly.
Yeah, and the security is very different than it has been in the past. One of the challenges I see in the development environment that you have is you'll say, well, I need a like-size sample for, even if it's a subset, right, of real data, because if you give me something that's completely unreal, how do I know how it's going to actually process through?
Yep.
And the quick answer is, we have a great software tool or process we bought to do that. And then the reality is I go and look at how most customers are doing this, and they're taking a subset of production data in a lot of cases. You may not do that for salaries and HR and a few other areas, but largely I see the same subset of data that's production data. And now you have compliancy and security issues as well. And so I think we failed you on the development side for not providing an environment where we could provide it securely and think about security and policy as part of that overall environment or the lab, for lack of a better term, that I'm going to set up for you to develop whatever project you're working on. And so that's kind of what I'm talking about here, is I can manage that as a holistic environment for you. And so the other thing I would think about is, I know you're way up to speed on this, Kevin, but you know, for a lot of folks, it's really tough to think about all the new capabilities. But if you have looked at nothing else, you know, really look at a lot of the new PaaS services that are out there, because this is where you're going to get a lot of the cost gain, you know, from our cost reduction, I should say, and agility gain from the business side. But from a development side, really, it's about quick time to market and leveraging some great new capabilities. Things like our cognitive services. I know you're not looking at Team System now and the hosted capability, but it's there, aka.ms/VSTS. There's some great new capabilities there, right? Again, we're not just limiting you to that, but there's a lot of services you can think through. And then on your open side, right, when you think about, you know, Hadoop, whether it's HD Insight or another service you're talking about, or Stream Analytics, you know, we have those capabilities now. And so these are services you can now take advantage of that in the environment. And I know it's overwhelming with all the new features and function. I always say, don't look at everything, right? But on your project, you know, one of the first things I help customers walk through is just thinking through it. Are we thinking about it in a modern way, right? Are we thinking about it as a digital transformation that we're going through in development? And so in this world, that's really what I'm talking about. Just realize what's available to you.
You know, a knee-jerk reaction, at least for me as a developer, is to just spin up a VM, right? Just,
yeah,
that's what I need. I need whatever I need to install on it. You know, this slide really speaks to it very clear that there's so much more to what's out there. A few of those things I've already started using, right? Azure SQL is almost a no-brainer for most people. Using like our NoSQL or DocumentDB in there. So just be clear for me, right? Again, from a developer perspective, if I look at all of these services, and whether they be PaaS or IaaS, with this dev test or DevOps package that Microsoft has here, it does cover all of these, right? I mean, I can tell you this is the template or these are the things I need, and it can make it like a one-click shop.
Absolutely, that's the whole idea around it. And again, it's both that open source, I want to make sure we hit on that one more time really hard. We are absolutely committed to that open source arena, as well as the Microsoft traditional, or the newer Microsoft model, which would be the PaaS SaaS services. And I'm saying that intentionally. That's more Mark's view than an official Microsoft comment on that. But from an infrastructure side, I really think of it that way. I think traditional IaaS, if you think about where things are at 5-10 years down the road, we won't be having IaaS discussions. You know, we largely won't be having server operating system discussions. And since I've let that slip out, you know, the database becomes even something as a PaaS you care less about what specifically is there and more about the features that are enabled for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I've mentioned that many times. And I'm glad you keep bringing up the open source. As I mentioned from the opening of this session today, you know, I prefer open source languages and open source platforms. So to hear that and to emphasize that for me just really starts to drive it home. I really do like this. I would love to go spin this up for me personally. This would be great.
Now, for a world that's really important to me and talking a lot about cybersecurity, I'm going to ask you a question, Kevin. On the development side, have you ever used production databases or information that may not have been ideal for development? And mainly, maybe because the infrastructure side didn't provide you something that was obfuscated. Has that ever happened to you?
It happens quite often. As a matter of fact, more times than I personally want. But a lot of times, you know, if I wait for data to be obfuscated or a subset of data to be provided that meets the requirements, that looks correct, so I know when I'm writing my application or developing whatever it is I need to develop, right, I need to be sure that works, because I hate getting into production and finding out that what I thought would work all of a sudden doesn't because some data is not formatted properly, or I'm expecting a certain subset of data that is not, well, maybe the test data I have is obsolete or old and doesn't really reflect what is in production today. So quite often, if I can, whether it be approved or not, I will quite often, you know, go directly to a data source that might be live.
I think today that's a necessity, right? And that's the other thing that I think through. I can provide you multi-factor authentication, right? And think about all the intrusion detection I'm providing. I know for you, these are just more buzzwords about me talking about that, but it protects you as well as me and the corporation on that, Kevin. I mean, I think about, you know, think about Microsoft and how we run. You know, it's not an uncommon event. I come into an MTC that's not in Chicago and I log into your machine or, you know, one of your beautiful Surface devices, and it doesn't know me, right? Even though it's a Microsoft asset. And the first thing it does is make my multi-factor authentication buzz on my phone. And of course, we support things like iOS, Windows, Android. We support all the major devices. But the cool thing about that is I'm really preventing bad things from happening and protecting you. So I'm not going back saying, you expose me, right? Because in the harsh reality of it, it's a partnership. If I provided the data that was, you know, obfuscated, I probably would have had less risk. And even your application code, you have IP, you probably have put a lot of time and energy. You don't want to just give up. And it may be a differentiator for your company. So you're protecting that as well. So these are the types of things I'm providing in that environment. And so I think that's something that I think when we think about it holistically, I'm not just giving the agility now, but the ability to manage that in a much more secure fashion. So with that, you know, I really think, you know, time-wise, we can go on for hours probably on this topic, but we probably want to turn to a few questions that you might have around that.
Yeah, no, there's not too many questions right now. I'm sure people are kind of munging through this and trying to understand it. I guess for me, again, as a developer, if I were to be watching this right now or viewing this, you know, if you could, again, remind me, where do I go to kind of learn more? Because, again, as a developer, I don't tend to want to think about the operation side, but you've kind of piqued my interest as to how to make this easier for me. And even if I need to go back to my IT, right, and tell them, hey, there's this thing that we need to be taking a look at. Where is that again?
aka.ms/DTL for DevTestLabs.
DevTestLabs. That's pretty simple.
Yeah, absolutely. And right in the portal, you'll find it as well. So if we go back to that portal environment, you'll see here that from the main screen of your Azure portal, if you're talking to folks in infrastructure or even on the dev side, if you have a subscription and you go through it, it's under development, and you'll see it under development show up as DevTestLabs. And so in this case, we should see when we pop a new environment in, You'll see it come up in a second here. It'll actually pop up with the new environment, which services you're using, and DTL is there.
Yeah, let me ask you a quick question. So I know if you haven't started with Azure or haven't been in it, you can sign up for free today and get some free credit. Can I use my free credit to do this as well?
Absolutely.
That's good.
It's all included as part of that. And as we talked about, for DevTest Labs, the core tool set and automation is part of the platform. So in a lot of cases, people are licensing this separately. In our case, you know, you get a lot of that automation just as a part of a core platform, which you can see and leverage. What we're doing here is just enabling you to really leverage that across your common environment. So in other words, creating that lab or your landscape, as I like to look at it, for development for different projects.
Well, that's good. So anything else on wrapping up here on what we need to get started, or is that pretty much it?
That's pretty much it, I'd say. The other two areas I would tell you that you should look at is look at ARM. And look at desired state configuration. That's probably a little more on the infrastructure side from the configuration of that, depending on how large your shop is and a smaller shop, that might be something the development group takes on. And then also, if you look at just those Azure automation capabilities from a developer, there's some great capabilities to take advantage of there. So you can certainly leverage that.
And I'm assuming this is all available in PowerShell as well, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I know a lot of my operations team loves PowerShell. I do a lot of scripting in PowerShell to do some things, but not quite as heavy as them. So I'm sure that would be key to them as well.
Especially as we've extended PowerShell beyond just the core environment that we started with there.
Absolutely.
So now supporting other environments. So that's great.
Well, this has been great. I know as a developer, I've learned a ton today. You know, for me, being able to automate, ensure that the environment is ready to go when I need it, being able to find that maybe I can define, at least with IT, what the templates are required and be able to spin those up on the fly. Obviously for you, I think being able to manage, track, automate, and back up and secure those environments is mission critical. So this has been wonderful. I really appreciate your time today, Mark, and I hope everybody watching this has really gotten something out of this as well. It's for me an eye-opener, and I hope everybody is there as well, too. With that, Mark, are we ready to wrap up?
I think we're ready to wrap up. Thanks so much for having me out. It's been an awesome conversation.
Well, thanks. So for next
follow-up. I did forget one thing we should probably mention, you know, because you and I do this so often. Where would we go to get the videos once this is over if I wanted to go look at the video again?
Well, I know we have them on Channel 9. We have a new YouTube channel as well, where you can watch this recorded after the fact, and we'll deploy that. And also on Facebook. So if you want to go ahead and check us out on Facebook, please do. We'd be happy to have another like on that page. So
fantastic.
Until next time, this has been another MTC Studio session. We'll talk to you later.